Mike Porteous on the South Coast. How the devil are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, and you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Beautiful. By the sea myself, so excited by that. To be on Zoom with you while the sea is not 50 yards away. Look, and I appreciate you coming on, and it was another fellow podder, Steve Rolnick, who recommended you. So that's high praise indeed. Do you want to kind of, yeah, maybe just like who you are, where you come from, why you think you're sat on a podcast with me right now?
Yeah, no, well, first of all, it's great to be on your podcast. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And we had a live very quick chat, obviously about a week ago. And I thought it was so interesting how, although we're involved in very different sports, and the kind of the things that people are going for in those sports are very different, just how similar some of our ideas and some of the challenges are. So yeah, maybe some of that will come out as we talk. But basically, I'm an endurance sports coach, primarily triathlon, and people doing kind of long and sometimes rather painful things, like very big swims, big mountain bike rides, ultra runs. And I have I'm very lucky in a way. I seem to attract kind of both ends of a wonderful spectrum. You know, I have some people who come who've never swum their whole lives, and they just want to learn to swim in order to do some big river swim. Or at the other end, you know, people doing quite established triathletes, going for a PB in their Ironman event, or wanting to qualify for the Great Britain age group team. And where the connection to Stephen Rolnick, I guess, comes in, and where I think we have so much in common, is that over the years, sort of working with that lovely spread of people, I came to focus more and more on self-belief and confidence, and believing that if we can work in that area, if we can, in a sense, in ourselves, become confident in working with people around how they're actually feeling as they're going into whatever event it might be, wow, we could have such a powerful effect. We could really unlock something that will have a beauty in a way of its own. You know, it'll create those moments where you're just left thinking, wow, how did that person do that? Or there's a phrase I use a lot, a the person themselves surprising themselves with what they can do. So that's, in a way, that's my kind of driver, in a way, to that's the kind of coaching I want to develop. And more recently, over the past few years, 5 years or so, I've sought to find ways of sharing some of that with coaches, not just in the triathlon world, but across all sports. Because I, like I say, I think there's a relevance there that it just has to apply to other areas. So I've got this coaching practice, which is very much one-to-one with people doing solo events primarily. And then alongside it, I've been developing, at the moment I call it confidence-centered coaching. I'm not sure if it really works as a title. I get blank looks sometimes when I talk about it. But that's where I want to be.
I've got quite a few questions already. So I have so many questions, and maybe a couple of, and thanks for sharing. Yeah, again, like who surprised themselves today, or point to someone who's surprised you today. We should be getting lots of great answers every session. My experience of lots of rugby session is there's not enough surprise, which probably means we're doing what we've always done. I guess, two questions. What got you into this? So how come, you've ended up at this point? And then, and I speak as someone who, as a member, as an economics teacher, came 92nd out of 110 in the Eastbourne College School Cross Country. I was just seeing my life flash before me. So what got you into it? And then what, and why do you think people come to you? And it sounds like lots of people are. What do you think's attracting them to you?
If I start with how did I get into it,
That would seem the right way to do it.
and then I'll think of an example of I can already think of an example something today, and I'm probably going to try and dodge the question about why anyone would come, but no, we'll make time for that too. How did I get into it? I guess it came from a real dissatisfaction about the way I was taught to be a coach. I went through kind of successive qualifications, and it just felt like the and I'm gonna if I had if I was writing this, I'd put this in inverted commas. The higher you go, and there's a big question mark about what is, what does that really mean? But the higher you're going, certainly in terms of the qualifications, the more things seem to be kind of focus around performance, about using the very objective measures, everything being kind of narrowed down. In my world, in the triathlon world, it's all about how can I help this person peak for this performance, to get this time, to get on this podium, all very narrow, kind of easily identifiable objectives. And if you want to develop as a coach in that kind of field, well, it takes you to a place of being more and more data driven, more and more into the science. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not decrying that stuff at all, and that, and part, I suppose part of the other, why do people come to me? It's partly because I've learned a lot of that stuff. But it just felt like there's something missing. And I remember on one particular course, it was like the most advanced level for triathlon coaches. We would have people come in, like the top ranking nutritionists or the Great Britain triathlon sports psychologist, or real experts in each of their fields. And they tell us all about their science, if you like. And we're all scribbling notes furiously and taking it in. But then in the evening, when we're all sat round having a pizza, what did we talk about? It was none of that stuff. It was stuff like,
So true, so true.
how do I feel about taking this
Yeah.
back to my club? Do I feel confident trying something different with the people I'm coaching? And what about that tremendously talented person who just every time they come to a big competition, it just doesn't seem to go right for them. That's the kind of stuff that we were talking about amongst ourselves as a group of triathlete coaches. Not the science. Well, there were a few down one end of the table who couldn't get away from that stuff. And I just thought, this is crazy. How can I get to this level and there be so little emphasis on how I'm developing my own self-belief, how I carry myself when I'm coaching, what I find rewarding in that, let alone how can I help develop relationships with the people in front of me so that we have a kind of a mutual trust and a confidence in each other, and how can I help prepare them these big, hairy, scary, long events that people go for. So I did, yeah, I just, I suppose I started doing a lot of reading, a lot, going to people like Stephen Rolnick, learning about motivational interviewing, learning about how some of the leaders in sort of non-sports related fields work to get the things that I was after. Yeah, I've kind of run out of steam a bit.
And then why do you
Oh,
think,
and
and why do you think people
then
f
just
why do you think
working.
people come to you? And is it like, I guess I'm thinking with some of the athletes that are like searching for PBs and stuff, is it because they're going like, I've got a gap here and I just can't like, and some of it's around my mindset?
No, I don't think so. I think I don't like generalizing, but there is a I can see there are some people who come who are really struggling with it. It's like a kind of inner conflict in a way. Let's say like someone in their late 50s who's never swum maybe has had a horrible incident in their childhood, but they've got this yearning to discover what it's like. And those people, I hope they're instantly attracted by what I can offer, because I'm not going on, about come to me and you're guaranteed results, and here's a picture of me with all my medals, and so people, kind of find a home that way. I think some of the people who are going for really big, kind of quite scary events, there's something really interesting. I think that quite a lot of them start off, like the initial conversation is a bit in that territory of, I want to do this event, or I want to get this time, or I need to get this place. But then as we start working together, and as I do quirky things like not saying, oh, I can fix it for you, come to me and you're guaranteed a result. Instead, I say, oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be possible to get that time or to complete this course. But wow, this is going to be fun. Finding out, working together, and here's how I think we can approach it. And so you start working in a much more kind of alongside people way, rather than me, kind of standing there saying, I'm the expert, I know it all, follow what I say, and if it doesn't work, it's because you haven't applied yourself properly.
Do
Yeah, and that's
you lose some people at that point when you go, I'm not sure. Like we may not achieve this, but it'd be great finding out. Because again, like one of the I know I'm interested in, because obviously I work more with teams and you work with individuals. Like sometimes in those worlds, people want instant success. They want, and again, I guess that's a dilemma you must have as a coach as well.
I can't think of anyone who at that point has said no.
Right.
I suspect quite a the kind of person who wants that instant result, they would probably look at my website and just go, oh, this is a bit weird. And there's so many coaches out there who would be offering, the kind of just conveying a sense that you're guaranteed. And often what they're playing to is they're saying, I was a former, whatever, I did the Olympics, or I was at this level. Come and I'll coach you. Which again, I just think that's there's something so wrong in that. You have no idea whether someone who might have been absolutely brilliant in their sport is going to be the kind of coach that's going to work well with you. It's nothing to do with their past achievements. Some friends, a good friend of mine, we talk about this a lot, about the kind of people who come to us, and she calls them magpies. It's people who see a shiny thing and they'll go for it, as if being with a shiny past Olympian is somehow going to kind of rub off on you and make you great. So I suspect this is a bit of a long rambling answer to your question, I know, but I suspect that kind of person just wouldn't, they just wouldn't come to me. They, like I said, they'd look at the site and think, well, no, that's not what I want. What I want. I think I have one person in about 11 years now, 12 years, where I was very explicit. I said, I'm not data driven. I'm not, I can do the fancy stuff, but my heart's not in it. And I'd much rather work with you to get to you attuning yourself to what it feels like to be at full effort, or to have a fluency in your swimming, or whatever it is. And the guy just thought, no, he prefers the people who are going to measure everything. No, it doesn't worry me really. I don't even want to use the word lose them, because I don't think it's a lot.
You just it's pretty fresh in my mind, really. I just come off a call in New Zealand rugby. We did a thing before Christmas, and lots of the chat then was probably like your evening chat around how do we ensure that the coaches have the confidence to go and try new stuff, to be brave. And I guess well, I guess I'm wondering, like, is that how you see this? Like, actually everything starts with the coach, really. Like, if the coach isn't able to be confident and have high self-efficacy, then it's going to be pretty challenging to support the people that they're working with to achieve those as well.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I think the more I can understand what's happening in for me, and the more kind of true I can be to the values I have and the kind of person coach that I want to be, it just seems to have an effect, to kind of a bit like rippling out. It seems to allow other people to be themselves. Because I'm not doing any pretense. I'm not kind of bigging myself up in any way. I'm just calmly listening, wanting to find out why someone wants to do some crazy challenge. Yeah, the more I can be that, it's as if it creates a space where people can just start feeling comfortable and more sure of what they can do.
Yeah, I guess, like, and so when you're working with coaches, is that it? Is it like it starts with self-awareness?
Say that last bit again.
Yeah,
It's.
when you're working with coaches, is like you're starting with their self-awareness, I guess, first, are you?
Yes, absolutely.
And when do they feel confident? Maybe when do they feel confident? When don't they? Like, what gives them confidence? What takes it away?
Yeah.
What would that process look like? I guess that's why you've written a book, trying to bring it together. But I guess the reason that when you did that, my immediate assumption is there isn't a process. However, there are some options around how you might help people better understand themselves.
No, it's one of those questions that kind of people say it all the time, oh, we need to be more self-aware. But actually, it's hard. It's not an easy thing, and it doesn't come by some instant, fill out a quick questionnaire and you get a result at the bottom. It has to be something that you feel deeply in yourself. Often, even before the words have formed, just having that sense of, what gets to me, or what really excites me, or why is it that I really admire that person, but I don't want to be anything like this other person. There is Michael Gervais and the Seattle Seahawks coach.
Is it Pete Carroll?
Pete Carroll. Yeah, they did a super audio book, and it's got a whole section about kind of finding your own values and your own philosophy. And I think a really interesting, it's one of the most helpful sort of processes I've gone through. It starts with just thinking about the people you really admire and making a, just kind of sketching it out, and then thinking, oh, does this, is there a grouping there? Oh yeah, no, these people actually, they have something in common. And now what is it? Why is it that I'm attracted to these people, or I really admire them? What is it that's there? And then I won't steal their thunder. It's a super process that they're set out, but it's kind of by going through that way of thinking about what connects to yourself, you can end up with a really good, clear sense of, well, these are my values. This is a person I want to be.
And do you think without that process, it's pretty tough to be confident?
Yeah, I think so.
Why?
Yeah. Because when things go wrong, which they do,
Been catching a lot.
where do you turn to?
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're, in the moment, you're suddenly really challenged by something, and it happens in an instant, and again, without any words forming in your head. What happens in that moment? I think if you haven't gone through this kind of deeper self-awareness, chances are you're just going to react, in a kind of in a defensive way. And as a coach, you're more likely to go back to the model of, well, who's questioning me here? Out there. As opposed to just being able to have that little bit of space, a pause to say, wait a minute. I don't like what's happening here, but this isn't the person I want to be. I want to respond in a different way. I think that's a key thing, a difference between closed reactions and open responses. And the gap in between is just a momentary pause where you're thinking, is this me? Am I? Wait a minute, don't say anything. Maybe ask a question. That's where the openness comes in.
Yeah, I'll sometimes get people to think about that trip advisoring their reactions just to create that pause, because it's really hard,
Yeah.
isn't it, when you've immediately taken me to my having a conversation with my son about putting those green learner plates on his car after he passed his test, and he used an expletive at me, and I wasn't able to take a pause. Quite challenging. But those types of questions around, what do you measure yourself on? Who do you want to be as a human being? Are quite important questions. It actually just triggered me. I was doing a stretch session with my mate last night on Zoom, and he's 50, and he was talking about, I said, oh, what we've been up to today. So I've just been writing my obituary. And I was like, "Whoa, sorry, what?" And he said, "Yeah, like I'm just definitely thinking like when I was 20 and I had all these grand plans for the next 30 years. Now I'm 50, I need to have some grand plans, and I want to know what it looks like at the end. Like I want to, And then we got into a discussion around like if they could only use two words. Then we got quite morbid now, but if you could only use two words to describe you at your funeral, what two words would you want people to be saying about you?" It was a good conversation. I guess that's the type of thing you're thinking about, isn't it?
Steve Peters wrote The Chimp Paradox. He talks about having your life stone, he says, as if inscribed on this piece of marble, the person you want to be. And again, I think that's a really helpful way of thinking about it.
And have you encountered people, I guess, and you your answer may be similar to mine. Have you encountered people that come to you, or because I think the problem is they don't come to you, who go, no, this isn't like we don't need to do all this excavation. Just tell me how to be more confident.
No, not really. No, the kind of thing that comes to mind is more a part of the approach I've developed, as you'll guess, it's centered very much around the feeling, what the person is feeling, but also on a physical level. Let's say a swimmer. I want them to feel in their own body what the movement is like, where it takes them, how much energy they're putting in. They need to read that themselves rather than me as a coach standing there poolside and saying, "Your elbow's not high enough, mate." Or you're doing this with your hands and you should do it this way. And there's been a couple of occasions where I've said, well, more than a couple now. I've said this both to a client very recently, and then also to a group of coaches. And I use the phrase, "Who owns the right way? Who owns the right way to swim? Is it me? Because I've been on these wonderful courses and I've helped so many people, and or is it the swimmer? They have to own the right way of swim. They have to feel it for themselves. Yeah, and that's more important than what it looks like to expert me poolside. So when I'm coaching people swimming, I'm probably very irritating about this. They'll often say, how did this look? We tried something different. How did it look? I say, no. Tell me first, how did it feel? Did you feel the difference? Was it harder, easier? Did you feel smoother in the water? Whatever. Anyway, I was telling some coaches about this. Who owns the right way? And one bloke was just shaking his head and he said, "This is ridiculous. Why would anyone come to us if it's just about feeling?" To which I didn't really have an answer. I just thought, well, people do come, and on the whole, it goes back to that lovely phrase. They surprise themselves with what they can do. They're surprised at just how brilliant smooth swimming feels. And I see this a lot with triathletes, because a lot of triathletes think of the swim as something that they just have to get through before they can really get motoring on the bike and then run. And I've had so many people actually end up saying, actually, the swim is the best bit. It's the most fun bit because of that connecting to what I'm really feeling.
Yeah, when you said about a novice, like swimmer, like experiencing the feeling of swimming, it was, I thought, oh, that's quite a cool thing to think about, isn't it? That you've not really experienced that before, like being in water and the flow. And I guess, yeah, I wrote a few things I wrote down there. I mean, I guess, In rugby, lots. I think most coaches think they're on the right way. I've just been to a conference in Nudgee and watching an international coach who's just barked. Like, I recorded 2 minutes of it, and there was 18 different instructions. I think I understood two of them. I probably have a view around feedback that they should own it. Really, I think like feel over think is something to think about. More interactions from them to you than you to them. Yeah, you have to like, I think coaching is helping people help themselves. So how would they be able to achieve that without being able to like talk through this stuff? But of course I still help people, like if there's something that's going to make a difference, like you know, if they're only swimming with one of their arms, you'd do something about it, wouldn't you? You might go, well, you might want to try and use your left arm as well. That would be pretty cool. But I guess even just the thought of flow as a thing, you know, like the right level of challenge, you know, just, you know, surprising yourself would be something you would think about as well in your coaching.
And I
How
think
would
another
you also go on?
such a creative way of being a coach. You know, if I can really focus on the person in front of me, kind of tune in to what I'm feeling, what they're feeling, what they want to do, then I don't know, it just ideas seem to come out of nowhere. And then you go home and you think, well, where did that come from? That was fun to try, you know, and some ideas work and some don't.
Well, even being in flow as a coach is like something that's like fascinating, isn't it? Sorry, you just triggered me on one more thing, just because I'm on this rugby camp. And I asked the kids about like what was their most like point to the person who you think's helped you the most in the last hour or so. And loads of them pointed to one of the coaches, Kingy, and he got them to he was like working with them, and they ended up with this kind of be like water. So they were just talking about the support play and how they are around the ball and just being like water and being willing to like flow and mold and be in the slightly different positions depending upon the other player. And like, I think lots of coaches would say, oh, that's, yeah, but that's not really technical enough, is it? That's not probably gonna, but it's such a helpful concept to think about and yeah, then to find their own way within it. I guess my question to you is like, how would you then? Because I guess the reality of the sports that I work in is, I said to you, I'm not that excited about individual sports. People would like, I'd be doing the heading quite quickly. But then, you know, you look at a team sport, then not only are you having to get this person to like, to be in flow and to be feeling it, but also like their connection with other people, both off the pitch and then on the pitch, on, you know, actually, this person might be really good at this. And so, how do we then anticipate that and react? And I'm just curious. Like, imagine I said, "Oh, by the way, Mike, you're coaching the under 15 B team today. I'm not trusting you with the A team just yet. I'm not sure your coaching methods are going to be technical enough for them." How do you envisage that in a bigger group setting?
Wow.
Because, by the way, I struggle to put myself in your setting, so that's why I'm dragging you into mine.
I feel like I've been thrown in the deep end. How would I go about it?
Well,
Well,
how would you go
this
about
is
it with
on the
an
basis
individual?
of.
So without, you know, and I know it's not mechanical and it's not processy, but one of the types of things you're trying to make people aware of in an individual context, and I guess I'll maybe try and translate that into when there's 40 of them on the pitch. Because the other challenge for people like me is like, I'm not just coaching on my own. So like, I might have a view of coaching, and then there's two other people who, you know, have diametrically opposite view of coaching to me.
What would I do with a big group of people? Well, and you're saying like I'm kind of plunged in. I know nothing about the sport.
Yeah,
I'm
you
gonna.
might know nothing about the sport. You might come and coach with me, or like, what would be the stuff that you'd be thinking about?
Right. Okay. Well, I'd be up front first off. I wouldn't try and pretend to be something I'm not.
So I'll call that signposting. By the way, I'm new to this sport. I don't, this is going to be cool for me. I'm going to be observing you. Please come to me if you have any questions. I may not be able to answer them.
I'd ask people about what really excites them. So I'd say, I don't know this sport. Can you just tell me, where'd you get a buzz? What's happening when you just think, wow, this is amazing? Either as an individual or as a group. And see what comes from that.
Not many coaches would ask
And
that
then
question in my
maybe
experience.
say, okay, sorry.
Not many coaches would ask that question in my experience.
No. No.
Certainly not at the start.
And then I kind of rely on thinking, oh, there's bound to be some super ideas come out of that. I mean, there have to be. If you get people talking and thinking about what really interests them, what excites them, yeah, okay. So in this training session, how can we, and I put the question to them, I wouldn't kind of put all the burden on me. I said, well, how can we work on this? What kind of setup is going to make this work? And how can we be a bit mischievous, maybe? How can we throw in a few surprises? Or how can we progress it? No, I suppose it's more kind of standard textbook coaching. Someone does something, you say, okay, well, now let's see if we can do that and a bit more.
Yeah, what's next level?
And then maybe make some space to say, and when it's hard, what's that like?
Yeah, it's a great
Tell me something
question.
about that.
That's a great question. I'm just writing down your question. I think it's a great question. You've got the job.
Thank you.
And you imagine you would use like, and I don't know whether it's something you, again, would you use like peer-to-peer stuff? Do you think that would be really high value in a more teamy environment? So actually, what do you notice about other people that excites them, or what's the stuff that they're bringing to this group that excites you? How can you help each other when things are getting hard?
I mean, to be honest, I just don't have enough experience to stand in front of a group and kind of spot who's the one who's going to kind of marshal ideas around them. I'm assuming that, that's the kind of thing that if you're engaged in team sports, that probably is just in your instinct.
Yeah,
But then the perverse bit of
it's
me
made
would
me
say,
realize that team
no,
sports is quite
who's been
common.
quiet here? Who's the quietest person here? Who's the one who hasn't come up with an idea? So let's just, it doesn't mean we have to put pressure on them, but maybe there's a way of just creating a bit of space, I wonder, you kept quiet. You've no doubt been thinking about stuff, but is there anything you want to add? I think I'd look out for that kind of dynamic.
Yeah, that's a good dynamic to look out for. And what I guess where's this like? Give me some great examples of like where this has got to. Like, what's the impact you've noticed from your work on developing this in people?
Shall I tell you a bit about two things today that I've done?
Yeah,
Maybe,
definitely.
and I noticed that in you. I think it's brilliant the way you when you ask someone to think about something, you relate it to what was that example you said? You know, who's been the most helpful in the last hour? Or, you know, what are you doing today? I think that's such a good way of kind of grounding things, I think. So this was my today. I spent a good part of the day working on a training guide for a guy who's I've worked with him before. He goes in for really phenomenal challenges, some of which I sit there thinking, you know, why are you going to put yourself through that? But I have this it's almost like a kind of, what's the word? It's like a basic principle, I guess, of always showing deep respect for the ambitions of the person in front of me. So rather than sit there and think, you know, this is crazy, he'll never do that, to think, I don't know if he can do it, but what a privilege to have a chance to be alongside him and see what he can do. And he's, I'm sure he wouldn't mind if I give a little bit of detail. He's already cycled across the whole of the South Downs Way, which is 100 mile, and it's really, really tough. He said, well, this year he wants to do it two way. For like, there's a tiny fraction of mountain bikers who would attempt to do it one way in one day, and then there's an absurd small number who try and do it there and back as fast as they can, and that's what he wants to do. But in addition, next year he wants to run the South Downs Way 100 miles as an ultra. To do that, he has to do a 50-mile event this year. So he asked me to draw up a plan that takes him two ways on the South Downs Way on his mountain bike, and then a few months later has him running a 50-mile ultra. And when this is a vivid memory. This was early this morning. I'm sat there with a blank sheet of paper, and I'm kind of mapping out the number of weeks, and I'm thinking, you know, how can we do this? How's this going to be possible? Like I say, actually, I don't know, but I think if we did it this way, yeah, we'd have a good chance. And if we put in lots of kind of learning points along the way, then it might be that it might be at the end of the day he doesn't actually succeed in that objective, but he will have had such a phenomenal experience. And I would have, from a selfish point of view, I'd have learned so much by being there. Yeah. What else? Another thing that stands out for me about it is I've never attempted anything like that myself. And I remember quite early on when people were coming to me asking me to coach them for things that I'd never done. I used to think, you know, well, I can't really do that. I can't coach them. And maybe this goes back to, you know, your opening question about why do people come? And it took me a while to realize people aren't actually coming for the kind of technical know-how of how to sit on a bike hour after hour after hour after hour. They're looking for someone who can yeah, kind of create that assured space and be present with them. And someone who, you know, when they're really up against it, they know they can talk with. Yeah.
Two
So that was.
questions from that. One is, you talked about those learning points, I guess. Like, is that something that you would like, that almost like celebrating those milestones? Do you think that's a reasonable part of what you do? Sometimes I think people forget that stuff. And then the other thing I thought about was like, and you spoke a bit about like when it gets hard. I think it's a great question. Like when it's hard, like what's that like? How does that feel? Do you then start to, do you actually like get people to imagine that and then they come up with like tactics to, for when that happens or?
Yes and no is
I can see your reaction to my word tactics. I was trying to think of a better word. So go on, tell me the yes part, tell me the no part.
question. We definitely have conversations about the, could call it the mindset strategies. So just about everyone who's going for one of these big events, we make time to, we have a proper session of going through it. But actually, it's seeped all the way through every conversation we've had up to then anyway. All the stuff about what you're feeling. But what, let's say I like this guy. He did an Ironman several years ago, and so we sat down and thought about what are going to be the kind of crunch moments when you're there. You've never done an Ironman before. It's a pretty brutal course. He would go and choose one of the hardest ones. What are going to be the crunch point? I don't know them. I have to find out from him. See, and so we thought, well, it's actually going to be at the start line. His nerves are just going to be shot, and he might have the biggest self-doubts at that point. For some people, that might happen before or whatever. But anyway, that's a part of it. Then we also knew just by the nature of the event. There are going to be times when it hurts, when it really hurts, when you're really thinking, I don't know if I can carry on here. And this is part of the experience of doing these kind of events. And then we also said, well, then there's also times when the unexpected happens, because that's what, again, things happen that we haven't planned for. We had no idea that that might happen. Yeah. So we thought about, well, what are these crunch moments? And then for each one, we think about what could he be saying to himself as a kind of, as a tactic? Yeah. So at the start line, is there like a mantra he can be saying? My pace, no one else's pace. Or this is my time, or I don't know what, but more, no, actually it wouldn't, that's a different thing. It's more like, how can you just say something about how he's going to get through it? Yeah. And there might be something that's more kind of motivational. How's he going to kind of lift his spirits? So like when it's really hurting, when it's really hard, this is something I've done, and it's the one occasion where I've suggested something to people rather than let them come up with their own set of words. But I encourage people to think about the phrase, this is hard, and I do hard things. So it's not pretending that it's not there. It's not beating yourself up and saying you grit your teeth and shut up and get on with it. It's acknowledging that it's hard, but it's taking you to a place saying, yeah, I'm only here because I do this stuff. This is why I'm here.
Yeah.
This is the story I'm creating. Yeah. And there's another dimension, but so basically, we end up with a little grid. And I ask people to fill out in their own words what they might say to themselves that's got this kind of tactical kind of getting what, how do you get, How do you keep your mind above all the noise? And then more motivational, how am I going to lift myself? For some sports, you might actually have to also think about just the pure technique. You are so tired, like in an ultra marathon, you're so tired. So you just have to say, right, think about one foot in front of the other, one foot. If you're using poles, poles to up and down, up and down, up and down, whatever it might be. Yeah. And then I ask people to go and rehearse it on the next long ride or next long run or whatever it is, just to play them through. Partly because I think a big part of it is having a kind of an agility, an ability to just shift your thinking, which only comes if you practice it before. Yeah. So it happens a little more kind of instinctively, intuitively. Wow, this is really hurting. What was it? Oh, yeah. This is why
I was
it's not
climbing.
good.
I was climbing Mount Maunganui yesterday, and in my head, I was saying, one more step, one more step. I guess there's a few things in there, like pre-mortem-ing it, imagining when the hard bits are going to be. Your closest relationship with the voice is the voice in your head, like self-talk, and probably creating helpful phrases that might help your mindset be more agile. And it sounds like, again, same in team sports. Like, we need to practice those moments regularly. Otherwise, when they happen in games, they will be a surprise, won't they? And
Yeah.
sometimes it might be that we can't physically practice them, but we have to visualize them and perform some mental simulations around it and try and make
Yeah.
it at least feel a bit like that. Oh, you could definitely do this team sports stuff. It would be easy for you.
Yeah.
And you put all your thoughts together in a book, I guess. I know you're like not that salesy. You're a bit like me. Like, what's the book? What's the current title? Because we're gonna is it? Because it sounds like you want to change it.
Yes, yeah. A very good question. What's the title? Kath. Yes, Kath Bishop, don't you? She
Okay.
recently sent me something saying you need to change the title.
I think you need to change the title. You said when you at the start, you said, "Oh, I'm not quite sure about this." So
Yeah.
you need to change the title.
But the book,
It's
I
currently
thought,
called. It's currently
it's
called.
currently called Beyond Belief Coaching, How the Enigma of Confidence Changes Everything.
Oh, I like that title.
So that's after Kath Bishop is that's post Kath Bishop's nudge. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, that's good. I like. And if people want to reach out to you, where's the best place to find you? Are you a LinkedIn man? Are you a
Yeah,
TikTok man?
this is said with a heavy heart. I used to use Twitter a lot. Look, Twitter is my main way of kind of getting stuff out there, but yeah, not now. So I'm slowly trying to build up LinkedIn as a way of just getting these kind of presence out there. Yeah,
Yes.
and I'm in the search of a publisher as well for the book. Books
Oh,
would really help.
if any publishers are there reaching out, and if any experts on LinkedIn want to help you become the most improved man on LinkedIn in 2024, then I'm sure they'll reach out to you. It was Aaron Walsh in 2023. So Walsh is obviously he's living near where I am now in the Mount, and I did notice that his LinkedIn became significantly better in 2023, and so I coined him the most improved man on LinkedIn. So hopefully that'll be you in 2024. Mike, I appreciate your time. Got me thinking lots. Give me some great questions to add to the options. Hope you have an amazing day. Well, evening actually. Day, evening for you. Day
Yeah,
for me.
I'm on the wind down now, whereas you're
And
you've
on
still
the
got a beach to get to, haven't you?
land.
So.
Got a beach to get to, some Zooms to do, but rock and roll, really. And we'll touch base when I'm back in the UK, but I appreciate you and thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for the opportunity. Yeah, and it's been great chatting. Yeah.
Good man.
Take care then.